The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
This is Professor Shy Guy. I sing, play guitar solos, and make chiptunes, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. I'm your host, Cap, and with me is...
Josh from Ghostbusters Resurrection.
Brandon from Nerdy Show.
And Doug from Ghostbusters Resurrection and Nerdy Show.
And this is a Nerdy Show Microsode 2-pack. Microsodes are where you, the fans, have generously supported us in our ongoing quest for nerd entertainment perfection, and earned the chance to decide what we talk about for 15 minutes. We've packaged two such topics together, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about video games as an art form, and the art of breaking video games. Plus, we're also going to be announcing which of our generous fan contributors have leveled up to become producers and honorary producers for the Nerdy Show Network. So sit back, take your shoes off, and indulge in succulent microsode bliss. To start us off, let's talk about video games as an art form. This is given to us by Kevin Weiss, who says, "How about video games as an art medium? My good friend Kent Sheely does a lot of art involving video games, including once turning GTA San Andreas into a photography game."
I don't know what that means, like Pokemon Snap?
I'll tell you in a moment.
or the like PS3 game Africa.
He also once referred me to gamescenes.org as a place to see more things like what he does. I'd like to hear about the crew's experience with such endeavors and anything you guys may have done as far as art in video games, experience, and so on. I mean, first of all, I think we should confront the bullshit from
Roger Ebert.
From Roger Ebert. I mean, he's an old dead man, and I give no fucks about his opinion.
Too soon.
He also recanted that.
Did he? Yeah, he did.
He's like, look, maybe I don't know what I'm talking
before
about.
Before or after he died?
Because before he died.
For listeners,
after he died, he appeared on high at the right hand of Gabe Newell. Gabe Newell.
Roger Ebert basically condemned video games as not being an art form.
He's a dick.
And he said they'll never be an art form.
And this is after being exposed to games like, I mean, I'm sure he didn't play them. I'm sure he didn't fucking know how.
Just watched
but
somebody
games
play.
Like Flower and so on, he snubbed.
The biggest problem with his statement is that for the same reason that he says that, a painter could say that film could never be art.
It's the same resistance that they came up against with the image of photography and the motion picture.
It's the same way that I say shit on a canvas isn't art. It's bullshit.
Yeah, if you poop on a canvas, I have a hard time.
That's art.
If he evokes poop an emotional response, then he...
Every poop is different and unique. It's art.
He's done it, but...
But the thing is, though, is it kind of is a new kind of art that does have completely different parameters, but it's actually closer to film than painting.
I was going
to
say the biggest problem with making video games as an art form is that too often video games try to mimic what they see in other art forms. Opposed to utilizing the fact that it's interactive to make it art.
Every game that I've actually taken the time to see how it's made, there are so many beautiful concept arts that people take so much time.
Hand drawing.
The average video
game. Amazing thing. And then people have to transcribe that into like a 3D digital work. And that in itself is an art form.
Right.
You can't just do it.
But my experience as a consumer, that's like saying, oh, this painting might be a painting of just a circle on a white background, but you know the skill it took to put that on there. It's like, yeah, but if it doesn't elicit an emotional response from me as the person viewing it, it's not really art. That's not to discredit the work that anyone does making the game, but what I'm saying is that when you look at something like a cutscene, you're basically watching a movie. It can elicit a response, but it's the exact same thing you would get from watching a movie. Mm-hmm. You need to take advantage of the interactivity of it. You got to be able to like say, what is the one thing that I can feel from a video game that I cannot feel from any other art medium?
And most modern like mainstream video games are much like motion pictures in that they're a conglomerate art form. Different people who have different crafts have combined their skills to make one bigger picture product that ultimately someone up on high will get credit for. and the other, everybody else will, you know, get
but
be
then,
a name in the
then
credits.
You have independent games that are just basically an art experiment. Like I would say Minecraft started like that, Flower, Journey.
Right.
Yeah, those are specifically like an artful experience.
Oh, and Ico and Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievably.
Now, don't get me wrong. I do think video games can be an art form. I just think my opinion is that video games have yet to find that one thing that only they can do and do it really well. Like they do experimental games like Flower and Ico or, you know, whatever. And those are good, but
Well, I mean, honestly, I would say the interactivity is something it does well. You can't interact with a movie that well.
That's
or
true.
Or a piece of art hanging on a wall, you can't interact with it. You just look at it.
Right, but ultimately, because of the limitations that video games have right now, it still comes down to a choose-your-own-adventure.
Well, for now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I just think the technology needs to catch up to the point where it can be truly open-ended. I would compare it to, say, like a tabletop game where you have a DM. They can literally do whatever the imagination says because you're going through another person.
Now you're saying that we need like an AI to create this game as we're playing.
No, I'm not saying we need that. But once that happens, then the sky is the limit. Like in Fallout or even Mass Effect, it all is just a tree. It's like a story tree. You can only go in certain directions.
There are only a certain amount of options.
And the more complicated, numerous options you have, the more complicated it seems and the more open that it seems. But ultimately, you're still constrained by the limits that technology has right now.
See, I don't know. I think they're already there. I think they're already there, not because of their potential, but because they found what they can only do that nothing else can. And specifically with something like Ico, is visually it's very stunning. It's established a mood in the way that only art can. But what it can do differently is that whole game, you have to hold this girl's hand to lead her through these obstacles and do that. And every time where that's difficult or you can't do it, you have an emotional connection. You feel very stressed out that you cannot get a hold of this girl's hand again so you can lead her through obstacles. Every time she's in danger, you feel it, you care. I mean, I think as far as film goes, you don't have to live vicariously through the main character of a video game because you effectively are them. Whereas in films, you really have to...
It's the empathy of
You have to empathize with
somebody
else.
Yeah, you're watching someone else's story as opposed to you playing something that's kind of... You put yourself into it's like kind of your story. Right. Not 100%. Not every game does that.
Watching Wander slowly degrade as he takes down each colossus, you know, and become weaker and weaker. I mean, that is
unique to video games.
It takes an emotional toll on you, and you're the one doing it. You're the one who has
to. And someone has
to.
Someone somewhere has to say this is what's going to happen, and this is what you're supposed to feel when it happens.
Right.
They don't just make it and say, "Well, I guess we didn't mean for that to happen."
Oh, I'm glad you felt that way.
Yeah, and that's the artistic part of it. Someone creatively had to think, this is what we're going to do.
I think that's what Roger Ebert didn't get, because he thought that maybe video games were just trying to be an artistic storytelling device, but games don't have
to tell
stories.
The last game he played was like Pac-Man,
which is great, but a game doesn't have to tell the story to be a great game, like Tetris.
What Kevin Wise was getting at specifically when he mentioned his friend Kent Sheely, who actually had a Wired article written about him this past August, he does work that it takes a game medium and subverts the game medium, but maintains the interactive elements to it. One of his more recent projects was a Minecraft skin that replaced all the tiles with corporate logos like BP, IKEA, and 3M.
Oh, geez.
I wouldn't play that game. It'd be too like, geez, I would just...
It was more like, you know, an experience you could have.
To be frustrated.
His project from 2007 that Kevin mentioned, Grand Theft Photo, he put a screen in the back of a fake DSLR camera and let you explore San Andreas locked into camera mode with your character being unkillable. So it took.
So you could only experience the game with your camera out.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
So basically, what he does is modifies the programming in the games to create something else.
An experience outside of the game, which is an art.
But it's not a game either. So it's just interactive.
It's not a game anymore.
Video games become the medium.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I mean, I honestly haven't seen too much of that. I've seen games created to be a medium and to be an art project, but I haven't seen a lot of games altered to become a different sort of thing.
His projects are somewhat unique in that that's what they
do. I think it's awesome. I just don't know how long I could wander around in GTA getting shot at.
The point is not surviving from point A to point B. It's simply like picking it up in a gallery and experiencing it for a time.
Yeah, just exploring a thing.
Another one of his is called Skybox, where he installed a large virtual skylight in the ceiling of a room inside an art gallery. And the sky displayed was the sky from one of several in-game skies at the precise time of day in real time.
Oh, interesting.
So the room would be lit by a fictional sky. It's also an actual sky.
Yeah, that's some future technology. We all need like those windows that are like showing different scenery.
The problem is that art doesn't have bounds.
What is art, Josh?
What is art? Oh, like paintings and stuff.
what about sculptures?
That's honestly an old state joke, though.
I can't take credit for that.
That always pisses me off because that's honestly what most people think. They're like, you mentioned video games, you're like, well, that's not art, it's a fucking game. And I'm like, do you have any idea what the amount of skill, even on a game you don't like, even a game that doesn't look that great, the amount of skill it takes for people to make those things is an art form. These are people that really care about this.
But
when most people say
skill,
this, oh, I just paint on a canvas.
Right.
That's the only art I know. I'm like,
but high skill does not an art make.
No. And art is obviously subjective. Anything can be an art. Not anything I do.
About anything.
I think something can only be art if there's intent behind it.
To create emotional response.
Yeah, exactly. Something outside of pure utilitarian function.
There's a lot of institutions that are popping up, like Game Scenes, which Kevin mentioned. We'll link to all this stuff on this episode's page, of course. Also, recently, LA Game Space, they've got a lot of people involved with it, like the creator of Katamari Damacy and Nobi Nobi Boy, Pendleton Ward from Adventure Time. And they, not so very long ago, released a pack of some of the work that their creators who are involved in building this space for developing games as art created. And among them was something I want to give a shout out to, which is a game called Video Heroes, where you play a clerk in a 1990s VHS rental store, and it's all from this abstract first-person perspective. And all you have is you have a rack of completely mismatched, unsorted VHSs, and they're all full 360-degree scans of actual cassettes, like They Live in Japanese and old funky movies, beaten up, even like some films that are in like white slip cases, like because someone bought them blank, and you'll turn it around, it'll say Star Wars on the label. And people will come in and they'll just see text and they'll be like, I want like something that's like this and like this. And so you have to actually go to the rack, you have to pick up a movie and spin it around.
This
and,
was
like,
someone's life.
Read it and consider if that's actually
so
what
this,
they want.
This wasn't the training video they used at Blockbuster Video. This was
wow.
Oh. That's like the farm simulator. It's like, no, I'm not interested. It sounds terribly boring.
I think what I was getting at is that art doesn't have very clearly defined bounds. But I think at the bare minimum, if you're playing a game where at any point you can pause it and it looks like a piece of art, it should be considered art. Like Skyrim, any screenshot you take almost, like it's unbelievably
gorgeous.
Not
the screenshots
moving.
I take. I try to find toilets and just screenshot.
I think of like Odin Sphere, Okami.
Oh, geez, yeah. Odin
I Sphere. Mean, all these games are meant to be gorgeous and evocative, and just by a strong aesthetic, the sight of them alone should move you. And I think in that alone, they should be allowed to be considered art.
Cap, do you remember the game we played at E3 with the different dragons?
Yeah.
And you were like the old man or the little kid floating down. That was a beautifully hand-drawn, hand-painted game.
Something. Earth.
Yeah. Every single thing.
We'll link to it. We did a video about it.
Every single thing was handmade, hand-drawn, hand-painted by one guy. Like, he spent over 200 hours. Still, they weren't done. It was completely beautiful.
That sounds awesome.
And Peter Gabriel, if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Peter
created
Gabriel
created an interactive art experience / maybe game. Thing?
Yeah, one of my favorite point-and-click adventures of all time is Peter Gabriel's game Eve, where you very metaphysically have a dialogue with yourself about the meaning of life, humanity, and its nature with religion and...
foot fetishes. At the foot fetish part, I was just done.
It's very complex, completely surreal. I highly recommend it. It's probably impossible to play. Maybe someone has a GOG mod. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Peter Gabriel's Eve. It's incredible.
You know, a lot of the point-and-click adventures were able to go that kind of surrealist
route. Like what were you saying? Each screenshot, technically, of the point-and-click is a hand-drawn screen.
Well, I mean, think of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. That's from start to finish. It might as well be a novel, you know?
Well, it was a short story.
It was, but it wasn't. it was, but it wasn't like the game. Yeah. The short story is much shorter.
Overall, I mean, video games as an art form, video games as an art medium...
I mean, there are games that have inspired other forms. For instance, pixel art is a relatively newer thing inspired by video games.
It's in galleries now.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
I like it a lot.
It's a natural...
Oh, no, that wasn't meant to be condemnation.
It's a natural progression. I don't think that... I like to think that as nerds, we're not going to condemn some new emerging technology as something that won't be art. Because,
unless it's iPhone.
Fuck that shit.
Anything can be a medium, and it's all about the human threshold of creativity to find out what we can do with it. That's the great thing about art is infinite possibilities.
I mean, if I want to fill birds with buckets of paint and then chuck them at a canvas till they explode, that's art. That's my prerogative.
As long as you
it's
got
beautiful.
Something to say.
Yeah.
It's cruel art, but you know what? It will evoke a response from someone.
The cruelty is the message.
So once again, the nerds win.
Well, thanks so much, Kevin.
Thanks, you're a cool dude. Thanks for the cool topic.
Like, I don't smoke weed, but like I feel like I should to talk about this, you know? This is one of those things.
Thanks so much, Kevin. And remember, if you guys want to check out any of the stuff we've mentioned in this episode, there'll be links on this episode's page. Let's indulge in a musical interlude. In this episode, we're featuring a couple recent additions to the VGM library of Nerdy FM, our 24/7 streaming nerd music radio station, which you can listen to at nerdy.fm. First up is Lauren the Flute with her rendition of Bonds of Sea and Fire from Xenogears. That was Bonds of Sea and Fire from Xenogears by Lauren the Flute. She's the flautist and lead vocalist for the Returners, one of the most kick-ass VGM bands on the scene. Their first album, Immune to Silence, comes out November 2nd, and we'll link to where you can pre-order it on this episode's page. Lauren's solo work is funded through Patreon, and Bonds of Sea and Fire is one of her fan-funded tracks. We'll also link over there, where you can check out her other flute and vocal work, and maybe throw some coin her way. But right now, we're going to talk about breaking games, thanks to Donovan Steyer. He says, I'd like to hear some of the Nerdy Crew stories about finding ways to, well, truly break games, video or otherwise. Infinite combos in Magic, making completely unstoppable characters in RPGs, finding spots in the game world that make your character fly away at light speed, you know, stuff like that.
I will say that I had two copies of Secret of Mana because I quite permanently...
Well, Bala, that was a fucking $70 cartridge.
Hey, man, I didn't say I bought the second one,
I figured discount.
Yeah. The point is, there was this glitch you could do.
I was a six-year-old bastard.
How many of you have played Secret of Mana? Because it's the best game ever. No.
Me.
Okay.
People raise their hands just for those of you listening.
The end of the game, you could get the Mana Sword, but you can only get it during the final boss fight. So I looked online back in the day, which was really hard to do. And there was this glitch in order to make your sword permanently the Mana Sword. You have to hold reset and power on the Super Nintendo while you're fighting this one boss. And then it resets you to the beginning of the game where you fight this other boss. That gives you an extra sword orb, and then once you beat him, you just continue the game normally with, like, your mana sword.
Poor shit.
However, the first time I did it, no, this is true, the first time I did it, it permanently corrupted the game. I could never use the cartridge again. All of the saved data said corrupted error.
You got trolled, dude.
I couldn't save it. I couldn't reload. Like, I couldn't undo them. I couldn't delete it. So I had to buy a new cartridge, and then, because I'm an idiot, I did it again.
Did you put your iPhone in the microwave?
Yes, but
break all the games on your phone.
It worked the second time, and I still have that cartridge, Mana Sword all the way. That's what I'm saying.
It actually
but
did
I broke
work.
My first game.
It actually worked.
Oh, yeah, it worked. Wow. Completely.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the first time it didn't.
I'm shocked.
I'm surprised you did it again.
I don't understand how.
That's all.
I was
going to go buy that game again.
Hey, man, a lot of mowing the lawns and shit. But, like, I don't understand how that
euphemism?
Corrupted all the. I'm glad you caught that. Yeah. No. Okay, well, that's the only game I actually physically broke.
Well, so. We're not necessarily talking about physical.
No, I know, but besides smashing things with hammer, what have you done?
As far as D&D goes...
Yeah, like, you're a game breaker with that.
Yeah, I'm a chronic min-maxer. I mean, like, I...
I always like at home, what is a min-maxer?
A min-maxer is somebody who tries to take their D&D character, or whichever character in an RPG, and find out exactly how far they can take everything in the sense of what abilities play off each other, which ones, you know, go the extra mile, which ones make everything a multiplier of everything else.
What powers stack.
God, exactly. Nerds.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't think the character was broken. He was just ridiculous. I mean, it was a ridiculous character. I made this warlock in fourth edition who was a melee warlock because there were feats you could do that would allow you to use melee weapons and use your curse target on stuff like that. So I had a crag hammer, which was 2d6. He did a d6 in curse damage. He was based around charging. His weapon was a charging weapon, and he had the horned helm, which did extra damage when he charged. So when he charged, he would deal 2d6 damage, a d6 from his curse, a d6 from charging because of his weapon, and a d6 from his helmet for wearing a charging helmet. And if he crit with his weapon, he would do an extra 2d6. So the only time that character crit, it killed the biggest guy in the room right away. And then I just rolled intimidation and went, everybody get the fuck out.
And they did.
And they did.
So essentially, you were supposed to do like a 2d6 originally, but ended up doing like 7.
Yeah.
D6.
Yeah. Plus my modifier.
How can you even keep track of that shit?
I had a bunch of different colored dice.
Yeah. Dude, I was there. Shit was real.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun to play, but that campaign, man, was a slog fest. I mean, we were just marching. My character got bit by something, so he was sick the whole time. It was the worst campaign to have that character.
It was a good campaign, like
story-wise.
Story-wise, we had fun. Yeah. But man, it was like, what a miserable world to live in. Like,
is there anybody to fight? No. And you're still sick. that's what kind of campaign it was. Other than that, as far as like video games go, Knights of the Old Republic. I mean, I have this horrible problem where I'll always try to do the min-maxing first, and I really shouldn't because it ruins the experience of the game.
Yeah.
Especially in a video game, not so much in a collaborative RPG. In Knights of the Old Republic, I was like, okay, so what's the most powerful attack I have? Oh, power attack. Okay, I'm going to use 2 lightsabers. I'm going to pick the soldier because he's got the most strength, and I'm just going to do power attack. And I leveled that up to max level as fast as I could all the way through the game, and I killed the final boss in 2 hits.
I mean,
and
that's not just really your fault. They had that ability in the game. They should have known better.
Like, I didn't actually like break the mechanics of the game.
You were just like, what's the strongest thing? I'm going to work with it.
Yeah,
and that's all you did.
But every time I came up against the bad guy, didn't grind levels, didn't do anything, just he's dead.
I think, like, that was a flaw.
He's dead.
That was a flaw with that game.
Yeah. But then I played it again as the weakest possible.
Did you literally go sorcerer. Like, what's the weakest attack?
Yeah, I was like, I want one.
And how can I make it worse?
I want to just play an evil sorcerer who has to rely on life drain to live. And that was a lot of fun. But I died all the time.
There's
sounds miserable.
Donovan mentioned combos in Magic. And while this one is far from perfect, but Nerdy Show's Colin has a really horrifying deck that if you don't hit it fast enough, it will ruin your life. This is the Chromozoa deck, Brandon. You remember this one?
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah. I think I finally built one that can beat him, but I don't know.
Well, the trick is attacking it fast enough, because once it gets going, you're fucking
dead.
He
has these cards where they multiply.
They're called Chromozoa. They're basically like big
turn.
Amoebas, and they constantly multiply every turn.
And he
turn.
Just has things to get more out, and if you don't stop them within like 3 turns, you've got like 50 of them.
And it also has this mechanic in it where it's this bizarre. This is where the breaking comes in, because that's just a mechanic of the Chromozoa. That's the whole point. They have some kind of a limitation
breaks
on
my
them.
Spirit.
And I wish he was here to explain this. I'm probably going to do this wrong, so Colin, correct me if I've screwed this up. It has some kind of phasing mechanism to make it not so apocalyptic, like it'll go away in a turn. But he has a card which turns the anything into a sheep. And
I remember that.
By turning it into a sheep at a certain phase, it will interrupt that phase. Thereby, it will, after that turn, turn back from a sheep and will be clear of any penalties and just continue to propagate.
Oh, yeah, he's God. A piece of shit. You know how I countered that? I was trying to build that rat deck where all my rats, it said you could have as many as you want, and every turn I'd get out more, and each one is equal to power and toughness of as many as you have, and I would have things that could just keep making more and more.
It was a card that granted the exception of, like, you can only have 4 cards of a certain card type in a deck, but this one said you can have as many of these rats as you want.
Oh, God.
So I'd have things just keep making more rats, and it would just be great.
We're all nerds here, and we hate
this is a safe place.
We all do really hate the nerd stereotype, you know, of the neckbeard. Like, I don't know if you shut up. Star Wars is the best.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah,
Star Wars is the best, Josh. But go ahead.
But you know what I'm talking about. I'm like, Darth Vader would never have done that. Like that guy.
He wouldn't have said no.
Who yells at people? You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not cool.
Who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Picard would never do that.
So I was shopping at a comic book store, and they were having a Magic the Gathering tournament. And this is Sorry. Speaking of breaking games. This guy was trying to pass off this bullshit card. The card was real, but his interpretation of it was totally bullshit. But I don't know what the card was, but it says, you lose next turn. Like, you know, like you lose your next turn.
Did he say that to the other player? Yeah. No, so goes, it meant he lost next turn.
He goes, no, he puts down the card. He goes, okay, and it's next turn, you lose.
What the a retard. That game. Is you not what it game. Means.
Was this an adult?
It was an adult talking to a 12-year-old.
Wow.
He's like, you lose next turn.
He thought he could trick him, probably, is what it was. He's like, oh, he's a 12-year-old kid.
No, he demanded that, like, the officiator come over, and he argued with this guy.
The officiator should have been like, you're an idiot. That means you lose next turn.
Yeah, and he's like, no, that's not what the card says. And, like, they would just argue about it. And so I guess that's kind of breaking a game story.
So show them how you break down a sentence, like, in third grade when they got, like, the tree and all the little adjectives go here and nouns go here. It's like, no. You lose next turn. You are the subject. You, the card holder, are the subject.
No. It's like the other player or opponent or whatever loses next. His interpretation.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So you could obviously take it the wrong way, but that's obviously not meant
it
to go
always,
that way.
Unless it says, it always says target player or opponent.
Opponent player
if it
loses
says
next
you,
turn.
It's the person who's casting it.
It was opponent. I apologize.
Opponent loses next turn. He's like, oh, the opponent loses the game the next turn.
Yeah, he's like, next turn.
Oh, I see you're saying.
Lose.
No, he literally loses the next turn. Yeah, like, he doesn't get to go.
Play your turn now, but next turn, you're fucked.
you better stop me in one turn. To be fair, there are cards that, like, you pull it out, but it's like, if you're this card is like blocked, you lose the game. It literally say you lose the game. Like you, the person who plays it. Not
yeah, it's a risky card.
Yeah.
But his wasn't risky. It's just he puts.
No, he's
why
just
wouldn't
a dumbass.
He start with that? I don't know. They played a whole game up to that point.
Well, probably because he only had one.
Turn. I've been saving this one all game.
When you just activated.
When I start to lose, you lose.
Now, there's plenty of other ways to break the games, mostly involved, like, not just like, oh, I can have the Monosword the whole time, but, like, you know, actually cheating.
Mortal Kombat 1, where is it just you keep tripping someone forever? Whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, I don't really think that was a feature. I think that was a mistake, yeah.
Whoop, 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 whoop. You can't back up? You can't get it up?
You can never teleport. You can't even teleport out of this ride. Because you'd teleport and they would automatically correct to the other side and teleport and trip you.
You couldn't do. You couldn't. Unless you try to trip him faster and you're like, no. I think you're about to do the tripping animation. You're like, whoop. Nope. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. I lost. Whoever gets the first trip in Mortal Kombat 1 wins.
I just remember trying to break games with Game Shark, which is like the PlayStation version of Game
Shark. That can literally break your game, though.
Yeah.
It can break your save.
I thought it could make your file corrupt.
It'll fry your memory files if you're not careful.
If you're not
but,
careful.
But I mean, that was kind of the beauty of it is that it was literally a hacking platform.
If you take that risk to break that game, yeah, you'll have some fun, but you could risk losing it. Which is why I always kept two save files. One for just dicking around, like in Grand Theft Auto, where it's like, I'm going to use the Game Shark to make it. I have $1 billion and all cars unlocked and blah, blah, blah. But when it's time to play the game for real, you take out the Game Shark and you just.
I never got, and we have a friend who would just play games straight up with Game Shark or Game Genie and without like the first time playing. He'd never play the game before. He just cheats.
No, that's garbage. Yeah.
It's like through the story, everything. I'm not going to say names, Clint.
Are we talking about? Oh, okay. Because
we know more than one.
Because John was real big on Game Shark, but he would play the game first.
Well, I was going to say, I'm playing Morrowind. This is my first time playing. I'm going to give myself a potion that lets me jump 5 miles high.
No. That was actually early on in the beginning of the game.
Okay.
That was a penalty. You find an alchemist who has this potion, but he's dead on the ground. You don't
find
know
a
why.
Dead guy, yeah. And you get his robe.
It lets you jump so high, but you die when you fall.
Yeah. The trick is to get that potion and then later in the game find a potion that will counteract, do some other element.
Falling
so
damage,
you can,
And if you're not over the water, you just die.
Right.
Final Fantasy VII, I probably did every Game Shark cheat with, and I did
Naked Tifa.
No,
Naked Sephiroth.
I tried everyone. So I beat that game legit so many
Giant
times,
dicks.
And I was like, screw it, let's do it. You know what? I'll try everything. I tried everything. Never could break that game. Worked perfectly until I was like, you know what? I'm gonna bring Aerith back from the dead. So
you're not supposed to bring
necromancy,
dead
Josh. The cost of necromancy.
She's in my party. I'm like, oh, this is pretty sweet. Save the game. The game just goes and like shuts down. And I turn it back on, and that save is fucked. I mean, like forever. Like that.
Like I still have it.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
It haunts my dreams.
Do you ever take a Sephiroth on the date on the Ferris wheel with a hack?
No.
I heard you can do that. You can take Sephiroth.
Dude, if you can, that's
no, you can't.
That's every fangirl's dream.
You can't do that.
So kawaii.
I did this similar thing with because like Final Fantasy VII was like your game at that time. My game was Metal Gear Solid. So I remember after
Final Fantasy VII was before Metal Gear Solid.
But you know what I'm saying? No. I just mean like that time of your life because you're older than me. When I reached that age, for me, it was Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation and using the game. Sure, after I beat the game, I'm like, what sort of codes do there? Because you have to look up these complicated numbers and stuff. And I remember it's like getting the optic camo that I didn't know you could get if you beat it like a certain way. I'm like, all right, optic like camo. Dude, yeah, you put on the optic camo, that game is just, you break that game.
You just like sit there for a second. You're just invisible.
Yeah, you're basically the predator. You're just
and
invisible.
As long as you wrap him, don't punch someone right in the face, you're fine.
No, you could punch someone right in the face. And they're like, who did that? And like, they're looking around and they never sound the alarm because there's nobody there as far as they're concerned. It completely breaks the entire game. But the beauty of it was that if you kept the optic camo on, in cutscenes, you'd still be in the optic camo, and they're like, Snake, what are you doing here? And he's just like a big green blur, and no one's like freaked out by it. It was ridiculous.
I think what broke that game for me is the first time I played it, I got to Psycho Mantis. And
I thought the game was actually broken.
To play Castlevania.
Put your controller on the ground.
When I actually first played Psycho Mantis, it was at night. It was like really 2 a.m. I think I had like school the next day. It was really dark, and I'm fighting him, and he's like, oh, you play blah 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 save game or Contra. And I was like, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And then like the screen would turn black and it looked like my TV would shut off, and I'm just like, I totally wanted to run out of there.
You were primed and ready for Hideo Kojima to mess with you hardcore.
I did. That was before I knew that he did shit like that.
Demographic. Now he's making Silent Hills.
Oh, man. And when I thought I knew all of his tricks and he couldn't fuck with you anymore, you made that game. Yep.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, Donovan, for requesting this topic.
Thank you, Donovan.
Thank you, Donovan. Donovan.
Thank you, Donovan.
Way thank you, Donovan.
Donovan.
Sounds like a sexy god vampire.
Rolling off the name. Yeah. Donovan's the name of the vampire hunter in
Donovan.
Darkstalkers.
Is it?
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, it is. Yeah. That's probably where you got.
Good on you, Donovan. Good on you. Before we go, it's time for some community news. So joining me is our community manager, Trench.
Heyo!
Like we mentioned in the last episode, our State of the Empire episode, we got a Patreon on the way, and that's going to change a lot of things for how you are able to support Nerdy Show. We're entirely listener-supported, and nothing's going to change in the way that we run off of your generous contributions, and we give you perks in return, and that even a dollar gets you a huge archive of outtakes and so on and so forth. We'll be announcing the final versions of our Patreon rewards as October ends, and we get all that squared away for sure. For those of you who don't know, Patreon is a system that allows you to create reoccurring payments for projects that you follow, projects such as the entirety of the Nerdy Show Network. And so if you want to just donate as you have been, like every so often, like every couple months or whatever, a dollar here, maybe $10 or $20 there, you can still do that right on the Nerdy Show site, but we're going to also have the ability to subscribe to the show via Patreon, kind of like how people subscribe to PBS or NPR as a reoccurring payments, and different levels get you different kinds of things. But as I was saying, that has changed an awful lot about the way we do some of the things we've done with support drives. And one of the things we started doing back in the day was giving people titles of honorary producer and actual producer of the network. And you may have noticed, if you follow the show on a regular weekly basis, that we haven't mentioned that in a very long time. Simple reason is we fell behind on it. There is a lot of number crunching, and somewhere in between, like computers crashing and all that, that work did not resume. But happy to say, our beloved community manager has fixed all that.
Yes, I did.
So we've learned some things. For starters, there's a lot more honorary producers and a lot more producers of the show, official producers of the show, than we realized there were. So we got to announce these incredible people, let them know what they have achieved, and that they will be credited as such in the annals of Nerdy Show, or the annals of Nerdy Show, if you prefer. However, the producer system is changing. As of the end of the month, the old way we were gauging it, which is that behind the scenes, if you hit a certain collective total of amount given, we would be handed out a title, that's going to be transferred over to stuff that makes sense with Patreon's logic. But all you guys are in the clear. So right now we want to give shout outs to the awesome people who have given so much to Nerdy Show that they are producers of the show itself. Some of them we've announced in the past, and some of them, this will be the first they hear about it. We'll be reading off all the names, and these guys will be credited as honorary producers and producers respectively on Nerdy Show. That's something you can totally verify. and the producers, that's like, if you want to get listed on a website like IMDb or any kind of credential thing, LinkedIn, you want to be listed as a Nerdy Show producer. Yeah, that's 100%. We will verify that. Honorary producer, we'll verify that too. I don't know how credible that is. If someone's looking on a resume, we'll do it. I don't care. You guys are great.
Go nuts.
First up, Shadow Broker, honorary producer.
M, honorary producer.
Yeah, that's a brand new one there. Matthew Cox, honorary producer.
Oh, I hope I'm about to pronounce this right. Joshua Maher, is that right, Cap? Do you know?
It's either Maher or Mayer. You just kind of slur it. Either or, you're an honorary producer. Hoo-ha! Pestilence, honorary producer.
Sean Redd, honorary producer.
Joe Barda, honorary producer.
Twomper, honorary producer.
Muckraker, honorary producer.
Kahalis, honorary producer.
Korik, you're an honorary producer.
Anti-Luke, you are as well.
Good old Gundam King, he already knows he is. He's an honorary producer.
Berto L. Kahn, also a new honorary producer.
Two Thumbs, who's now, much like community manager Trench, working for Nerdy Show, he's an honorary producer.
John Laval,
who has risen from being a fan to Nerdy Show's live producer,
is an honorary producer.
But that mofo, he just, he upped the ranks.
I don't know that he quite qualifies because of, like, just how much additional support in other forms he's given.
Let's say he was an honorary producer. We're mentioning him now in the interest of fairness, but he's definitely up the ante. I mean, he basically invented a position for himself. So, John Laval, live producer. Hoodoo Voodoo, honorary producer.
Ross Butler, honorary producer.
And finally, Tolan, honorary producer. And now we'll go on to the actual producers. All you guys listed here, you've been honorary producers and you've known that you were honorary producers. But now, oh yes, how you have grown. You are 100% official producers of Nerdy Show. Starting first with everyone's favorite lumberjack jumping from tree to tree, extracting their savory sap, it's Mauron. Or Mauron.
Colin's number one son.
Mauron. I need to re-listen to the D&D Q&A so I can remember how to say it correctly, because I do not. But instead, hopefully one of those came real close.
Archaeus.
Actual official producer. Just like Trench and Two Thumbs. Moved to Orlando out of sheer coolness and force of will and has been assisting Nerdy Show behind the scenes. He's an actual producer of the show. Big Bad Shadow Man, official Nerdy Show producer.
And Viral Demon, official Nerdy Show producer.
Yeah, he was one of two people who made that grade before we dropped the ball. And then we got our first official producer who was ever announced, and someone you all know and love, someone who is, maybe if we had a system in place for hitting an executive producer title with this amount, this crazy, crazy generous amount, we would have invented that as well. But you know him very well. It's Trench 88, who is an official producer and now the Nerdy Show community manager.
What a long, strange trip it's been.
You started listening to us when you were off in Afghanistan, and now you live in Orlando.
Long before that, actually.
Wow, okay. So it has been.
First time I ever donated to the show was when I was in Afghanistan. I just had meant to do it for so long that I hadn't. So I threw a lot of money into it once.
Well, thank you, Trench. Thank you very much. I mean, it is genuinely staggering. Even if you weren't here as a community manager, what you did to further the cause of Nerdy Show was unprecedented, as well as the works of everyone on this list, everyone whose name we've just read. Thank you so much.
Indeed.
The path to official producership is not closed down. The manner in which you walk down it has simply changed, and we'll go into that when we announce the rewards for Patreon. Every month we release a new perk, and this month, in case you didn't know, if you contribute any amount, even just a dollar, to Nerdy Show, by clicking on the link on the front page or going to nerdyshow.com/support, you'll hear Galdap read some Harlequin romance. But not just any Harlequin romance. This Harlequin romance was written by Catherine Applegate and Michael Grant, who later went on to create Animorphs. We've decided to exhume one of their early stabs at making money off of this thing they call writing,
and writing some smut for old ladies. So, or in this case, an aged wizard of an indeterminate age. So if you want to hear that, you know what to do. This month, we're coming up a little dry. As of this recording, we've got $51 out of the $300 it takes to run Nerdy Show for the month, all of our basic support costs. So if you can give anything, please do grab these succulent perks and help us out. You'll be getting, in addition to that Galdap stuff, you'll get, man, hundreds of hours of hilarious outtakes, deleted content, episodes. If you're a fan of D&D, just look at the list. It will maybe kind of blow your mind if you haven't seen it.
That wizard smut, though.
There could easily be more where that came from if you guys let us know how you feel about that when we mail it out at the end of the month. And another way that you can support the entire network is by buying stuff through Amazon. Chances are you probably already do buy stuff through Amazon. And if you simply take an extra step before you add stuff to your cart and click through the links on Nerdy Show, you'll be logged into Amazon through our affiliate links. And that means everything you buy, a portion of it goes to Nerdy Show. No extra money for you, some extra money for us. There's a link on all the pages to Nerdy Show and an animated Amazon banner. You can't miss it. Or you can go to nerdyshow.com/Amazon. You might even want to bookmark it because that's more convenient. And what's more convenient for you is more convenient for us.
It's a win-win.
In fact, I have a little bit of mail from Jerry Appel, who said, because you guys are awesome, I ordered my lifting weights and a space heater using the Nerdy Show link. You guys are awesome, and I'm proud to throw fan love your way. Keep up the great work. And Jerry, thank you very much. And you keep up the great work, too. I want to see you getting those chiseled guns, just pounding out sets while you have the space heater on and you're just sweating out all those toxins. You're getting ripped and listening to Nerdy Show.
Are you channeling Dean a bit there, Cap?
I think Jerry's channeling Dean when he bought that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I love about it is it doesn't necessarily have to be nerdy stuff you buy. It's just whatever random miscellaneous things that you need or, you know, want to buy. It all counts.
People have bought slacks and chairs and some really cool movies. But I mean, I'm talking about random stuff. So if you got random stuff you want to buy, or hey, I mean, this holiday season, there's probably a lot of gifts you're going to buy for people. If you buy that through Nerdy Show, you're giving us the biggest gift of all. And if you want us to give a shout out to you, we totally will. Write in at info@nerdyshow.com and let us know what you've been spending your money on, or just let us know that you've done it. We don't need to know about the Bad Dragon dildos that you've purchased via Amazon. I mean, that's a totally respectable thing, and you can tell us if you want, but whatever you do, it's great. And don't be embarrassed about us being able to see what has been purchased, because we won't know who purchased it. We only see the items. So we'll see, oh, hey, someone's getting their kicks on Nerdy Show's dime. That's cool. But we won't be able to say, oh, man, community manager Trench88 is really into this octopus tentacle dildo. We won't know that. That's not a thing that
we'll
know.
You don't know me. Don't judge me.
So anyway, that's some stuff you can do. And if you can help out, that would be great. Hope you have enjoyed this Nerdy Show episode. Thank you so much for listening. Taking us out is Beware the Forest, Eighth of Mushrooms by The World is Square. They're a 5-piece VGM folk band from Boston specializing in Square Enix music. This is their take on a piece from Super Mario RPG, and it comes from their most recent album, Stay a While and Listen. Bye, I'm Cap.
I'm Trench.
See you next time. Thank you. you.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. We mean that. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or directly donating to the network. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store, and for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks.